Hello, and welcome to another episode of Dev Radio. My name is Jennifer Marsman, and I'm a Principal Developer Evangelist with Microsoft. And joining me today is Jason Fallis. Welcome, Jason.
Hi, Jennifer.
So, Jason, will you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, where do you live, your dev experience?
Sure. I live in the Toledo, Ohio area. So, and a company called Proficient. I'm a technical architect out of our Detroit office, so I help out clients in the Detroit and Toledo area, Northwest Ohio. I've worked for Proficient for the last 4 years. So most people say, wow, 14 years, that's a long time. But the way I see it is I get a new job every, 6 months or so as I change from one gig to another gig. So
nice.
Enjoyable experience for me. Here in Toledo, I help to lead the Northwest Ohio .NET user group. And I'm a frequent speaker, regional conference, and so on and so forth.
Good deal. Yeah, I've actually heard you speak. I actually want to talk about that a little bit later on. Okay. But first, today I really want to talk about Windows 8 and Windows 8 development. So I understand you have an application in the Windows Store that you've developed for Windows 8?
I sure do. I have one app that's in the store, and I have another app that is in certification right now.
Nice. Very good. Well, I have played your game. I'm horribly bad at it, I will admit. I'm getting better, but it is a very cool game. Do you want to tell us a little bit about Nave Defender is the one that I was speaking of. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So Nave Defender was a game that I thought up in a session of yours, actually. It was, I don't know if it was a boot camp or what the event was, but you were telling us about the store and about Windows 8 app development and whatnot. So I thought, well, what's something low-hanging that I could use as an example or as a learning process for writing Windows 8? And I came up with the game concept. It's more or less a solitaire game, kind of a Space Invaders theme, uses blackjack math for the cards, and you're just trying to get stacks of 20, and then the stack disappears, and you get to start over with another one. I can show you that game if you'd like.
That would be awesome. Let's see it.
All right, so Nave Defender is that solitaire game that I talked about. And it comes into the menu, and then the first level of the game is a tutorial. So it kind of teaches you how to play the game as you're going. So there's little UFOs that are falling. So this tutorial has one UFO. And as it's falling, I have a 10, and an ace is worth 11. So that's going to blow up that stack. Now, the next cards that come through, a 2 and a queen, that's 12. Add 8, that's 20. The next card's a 10. So 10 is going to make me bust. And when I do bust, the UFO kind of escapes. And then if too many UFOs escape, you lose a life. If the UFO lands, you lose a life. So it's kind of solitaire with a timed aspect to it. And there's
it's
different
gorgeous
levels.
Graphics.
Oh, thank
it
you.
Looks there's beautiful.
Different levels in the game, as you can see on this screen. So some of them have, like the very first level tutorial had one invader. Others have 5 or 4, up to 7 invaders. And then there's different cards, number of cards in the decks and different sorting of those decks.
Yeah. I like the math is hard level.
Yeah, hard. The very last level is just an endless. If you get that far, you just keep on playing forever. If you want to play a particular level, you can just select it and play right from the screen. Essentially, that's it, though.
Oh, that's very cool. And then what are all the other things in the app bar?
So we have basically the menu is repeated over on the right side, the global side. And on the selection side, it varies based on what screen you're on. So if it, in the game, we have like an end and a pause and a restart. And if I'm in the scores, the high scores table, I can clear the high scores, those types of things.
Very nice. Well, no, this is just an awesome game, and as I said, I've played it many a time, and I'm still working on it. I can do the math, but for some reason, I don't know why it I'm not very good. But very, very cool stuff, Jason. So you got this particular app is available in the Windows Store right now called Nave Defender, and you're also working on some other ones, right? I remember seeing a blackjack thing that you've done as well. That was a very beautiful app in addition, correct?
Yeah, so sticking with the name, the moniker of Nave, which is more of a European term, that's what I gather Europeans or some European countries would call the jack in a deck of cards. They call it a Nave. So that's where that term comes from. But sticking with that, here's a blackjack game. Basic casino blackjack. And 15 to 7, I'm going to hit.
Oh,
22,
this is
I busted. But what's unique about this is I tried to be realistic, you know, as far as how the cards move, the little things that they do. So like if I 19, if I double down, it's going to give me that card sideways, those types of things.
It's beautiful. Everything is just so well designed as well.
And you're not just limited to this view. You know, this is actually an immersive game. So as a user, you know, if I want to zoom out, I can. If I want to like rotate my view of the table, I can do all of that using the pinch gestures, the twists, and also the mouse is supported. So like scroll wheel, scroll out, control scroll wheel will do the rotations and so on and so forth. So I can get way in and kind of see, you know, how detailed the cards are, or kind of zoom way out if I want to. It's also supported in the snap view. So the same type of operations work over here in the snap view.
Oh, very cool. That looks
great. So this one is pending certification as we speak. So maybe by the time this show airs, it will be in the market.
Very nice. And this is Nave Blackjack, or Nave 21 was the
Nave
title.
Nave 21, yeah.
Nave 21. And then how much do these apps cost in the Windows Store?
Cost is one of those tricky issues where you don't know what the store will support, and you kind of want to get compensated for the time that you spent developing these things. So Nave Defender is currently listed at $1.99 with there's a trial period also, so you can try it out for free. And Nave 21, the first listing, I just threw it up there at $5, again with the trial period. And the Nave 21, even though when the trial period ends, I'm going to let free play continue. So it's just going to nag you on startup, but you'll get invited to buy it. But if you say no thanks, then you can still play the game unrestricted.
Excellent. Very nice. Well, let's talk a little bit about the code for a second. As we've discussed many times in the past, there's multiple development choices you have for developing these Windows Store apps. And so what is your development choice? Are you a C# SAML kind of guy, or an HTML JavaScript kind of guy, or DirectX?
I'm primarily an HTML JavaScript person, both professionally in my career, even though I straddle that line in between both. You know, I can do .NET development. In fact, when I do server-side code, it's all .NET. I've done Windows desktop app development before, but primarily what I'm doing these days is HTML, JavaScript, and a lot of client-side application development.
Okay.
So I have a preferred stack. So over the last year, I've been using like Knockout.js for the observables and the data binding concepts, you know, jQuery for the graphics layer, because I'm doing everything that you see in these games on a canvas, in HTML5 canvas. There's a library called Kinetic, and these are all open source libraries. The source code's on GitHub and whatnot. But Kinetic is the magic that's doing a lot of the graphics, the canvas graphics that you see going on in these games.
Very good. And then what are the advantages that you get from the other aspects? So you mentioned jQuery, and I think that there's of course a lot of benefits to that. And the other thing is Knockout.js. Not everybody may be familiar with that. Can you talk about the benefits of Knockout.js specifically?
Yeah, so Knockout's a game changer. It really revolutionized web development, for me at least. So Knockout gives you many, many different things. It gives you, first and foremost, it gives you this concept of observables. So that's where you can have things watching your JavaScript object model. So if I have a variable called first name and it's an observable, whenever that value changes, things can get notified. So separate of that, you can it supports binding. So you can have like a span or a text box in your HTML that's bound to that JavaScript observable. And then that's all that you have to do is set up that binding. And if that JavaScript value changes, the HTML will automatically be updated for you. So in that aspect, what we're looking at here on the screen with this blackjack game, the number 20 that's showing the value of the card, that number is actually maintained in the JavaScript. And then I have an element that watches for when that number changes. So I subscribe to that number. So when it does change, my function fires off, and then I have to update the screen with that 20. So it's just kind of like an observer pattern for managing your code.
It's very nice. I know that's one of the historically that's been one of the benefits of XAML, and so it's nice that there's libraries like Knockout.js to bring that functionality over to the JavaScript side of the house as well.
I agree.
And this actually brings up something that I'm remembering from the past. I think it was at the conference DevLink. Jason, you and a gentleman by the name of Michael Eaton did a talk together on basically comparing and contrasting using HTML5 and JavaScript versus using XAML and C# for doing Windows 8 development to produce these Windows Store apps. Can you summarize some of the high points? It was an interesting conversation, I think, where you kind of went back and forth, and both of you were developing the same app in the two different languages. So can you summarize some of the high points of what each one is strong at or what your thoughts are? Keeping in mind, of course, I know you are coming from the HTML, and that is your personal preference as well.
Yeah, so that was an interesting talk, right? Because first of all, it's always fun to get on stage with another person because you're not on time. You can bounce off of them and kind of work the crowd that way. So that was a really fun talk for me. So Mike is the UPF guru, the XAML guru, and I was coming at it from the HTML JavaScript side. And what we found, well, we started with a common app. So we started with a Blackjack app, which happens to be the genesis of the Knave 21. And I developed something, and then Mike would develop the parody part of it in XAML. And then we talked about their experience of going both ways. So like on my side, I had to bring in Knockout for the observables, where XAML has some of that built in. On his side, it was really complex, or at least in my mind, it was really complex to like do some of the styling things that, you know, we just get automatically with HTML and CSS, whereas it took a lot more angle brackets in his world to get those same styles into there. So things like that are what come in as significant differences. I thought that I had more velocity on my side, but I guess it's more of a matter of what you know as far as how fast you can develop an app. So, you know, okay. Since I do that day in and day out, and he does XAML day in and day out, I thought I had more velocity, but he thought he had more velocity. And in the end, it's really just a matter of preference. You know, the platform supports both, which makes it a great platform to develop on.
Right. Good deal. Good deal. And of course, by velocity, you're referring to the speed of development, not the speed of the performance of the actual app, the end app.
Right. So there's probably some advantages for performance depending on what you're doing if you're using a .NET world, because a HTML app is running inside the browser, so it's running in a hosted version of IE10. So you get certain benefits because IE10 is optimized and it uses graphic acceleration and all those types of things. So you get certain benefits in that way, but you lose other benefits like the ability to render 60 frames a second or whatever that you would have in the XAML world. So there's trade-offs ways.
Good deal. Good deal. All right. Well, Jason, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I'd like to close with, based on your experience shipping to an app to the Windows Store, do you have any tips and tricks for folks who haven't done it yet? So what I'm actually about to start a blog post series, and I have a whole bunch lined up myself of various things, like here are some of the things that people are the kind of the top errors that people are facing during the Windows Store certification process. And I'm sure people could benefit from your experience as well. Were there any gotchas with the submission process or tricks or recommendations you would make for other people?
Yeah, in fact, in preparation for this interview, I prepared a little demo app. So let me show you some of the things and talk about. All right, so one of the first things that I quickly found out, was that if your app crashes for any reason while the testers are testing it, then it's an automatic failure. And that's frustrating, especially now that, you know, there's thousands and thousands of apps trying to get into the store. The turnaround period between submittal and acceptance or failure is like a week long, where it used to be only a couple of days. So you're waiting on pins and needles that whole week, hoping that it doesn't crash. But unfortunately, Nave 21 has crashed the last couple times I've submitted it, and it's always come down to one of several common problems. So the first one I want to show, or the first tip I want to show, is well, here's a sample application. So on this application, we have a button, and when the button's clicked, we're going to wait 5 seconds, and then we're going to update a text box. So let me control F5, which starts without the debugger. I'm going to navigate to that page with a timer. So when I click this button, 5 seconds later, we'll see the output's going to change to the current time. But notice that in the code, I was doing that with a set timeout, because JavaScript's a single-threaded environment. So if you want to do something asynchronously, the most common way to do it is like set immediate or set timeout if you want to wait a little bit. The problem with set timeout, though, is that your callback function, the variables that it referenced might fall out of scope. So in this case, what happens if the user clicks that button and then navigates off of that page? Well, in this example, we're going to see the app just bomb. So this would have been an automatic failure for the store submission. And really, as a user or as a developer, if you're testing this outside of the IDE, like I use Control F5 to start that up, so I had no debugging experience, you really don't know why it crashed. It just dumped, right? It doesn't have any error messages or anything to display, because Windows 8 apps, you want to fail fast and get the user back to the start screen. So my little tip here is take advantage of the WinJS application on air event and just dump out to local storage like a crash.txt file. And that way, when it does crash, the local storage maps to the app data in the user profile, local packages, your app package name, and then local state. So in here is that crash text file that I wrote out right before the application bombed. And you see here that it's saying, you know, the error messages. I can get the error message. I can get the page that it happened on. I can get even the line number. And then I can go back as a developer and look at that line number and say that, oh, here's why it crashed out, because it wasn't able to get a reference to this object. And that's because the user navigated off the page, so this part of the DOM was destroyed as part of that navigation.
I see. Very good.
So that's tip one.
It's a great tip.
And where to go from here? So one of the things that that I tend to do for timeouts is, let me grab some code here so I can paste it up somewhere in here, and then I'll rework the code. So I like to keep an object for storing timeouts. In JavaScript, we can cancel a timeout. We can cancel a timeout if we know the ID number that's assigned to that timeout. So in this case, when I call the setTimeout, I'm saving the number, because setTimeout will return like an integer. I'm saving that integer into this object, the 5 second rule, just so I have reference to it. And if I need to abort or cancel out of that timeout before it fires off, I have a reference to that number, and I can do that. So I capture the number, and then WinJS gives you this convenient unload function here. And in there, I just iterate through my collection of timeouts, and I clear each timeout that I come across. That way, I don't run into a situation where the user navigates off of the page, and then that object doesn't exist anymore. So to show that that actually works, I hit that. I'm going to navigate off. And this should have been 5 seconds by now, but the app is still alive. So I was able to recover from that just by handling it. So the other tip along those lines is JavaScript, or especially Windows applications like this, behave like single page applications, which is kind of a newer concept in JavaScript world. A normal web application, the JavaScript, the scope or the object lifecycle or lifetime of JavaScript objects is usually not that long, because, you know, the user requests a page, they do something on it, and then they post back, and then everything, all the JavaScript from that page is destroyed on the post back. But with a single page application, you know, things stick around longer because you're using AJAX for callbacks and things like that. So you have to be more mindful about JavaScript objects and memory management, because if you use bad JavaScript programming techniques, then your memory is just going to leak and you're going to eventually consume resources. And that's not a good thing either, because your app's going to start slowing down and whatnot. So the other thing I wanted to show is this isn't really a tip for the store, but since we're here in the application, I just wanted to show this particular feature of Internet Explorer 10. Actually, it's more of an HTML5 CSS3 feature, but I used it in that blackjack game for the table. You know how you can rotate the table and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
So here's a screen with things rotated. In fact, you know, I can move this around. So this is using the 3D transform features of CSS. So we have like an X and a Y and a Z axis, and we can move this div around the X, Y, and Z axis. So while this is great for a blackjack game, maybe it's more of a situation where, you know, you can have some information that's kind of visible but skewed over on one side of the page. You know, so there's different applications of this. But what I wanted to point out is that the browser, IE10, is doing the transforms for me. All the coordinates within this red box on the screen behave as if the screen is not transformed at all. So if I touch this button, even if the button's rotated and the page is skewed and whatnot, that button down there in the lower right now behaves as if, or lower left, behaves as if it was in the upper left. So when I click it, I go back. So that's just kind of a free feature that IE gives you, and I use that for the blackjack game.
Very cool.
The last thing I wanted to show and this was a recent error. So my most recent failure submitting to the store revolves around this. And that's the concept of local and roaming state. So in the blackjack game, and we're actually looking at actual code here from the blackjack game. So the blackjack game, there's a set of code or a set of settings that is roamed, so that if I start blackjack on one machine and then like turn it off and start up my another machine, I can resume that game kind of where it was, more or less. So that uses roaming settings, and roaming settings is just a collection. So there's window.storage.applicationData, current, roaming settings, and that's kind of like a property bag, or there's a value collection off of there that you can put things into and take things out of. Now, one thing that happened to me recently was that I submitted to the store and I got a failure back a week later, and I couldn't figure out why the failure happened, because one nice thing about when you do fail in the store, they give you this PDF document showing screenshots, and they show what they clicked on and then what behavior happened. So basically they said in the blackjack game they clicked on the deal button and the app crashed. And I fired up the blackjack game and I clicked deal, you know, hundreds of hands, and the app didn't crash on me, and I couldn't figure it out. So I gave a copy of the game to several friends, and immediately one of them replied to me saying, you know, I clicked the deal button and it crashed on me. And I was like, you know, what's going on? Turns out it comes back to this roaming settings. I had things in the roaming settings. Specifically, I had this array filled with cards, because it keeps track of what's left in the deck so that you can roam to another computer. And a new installation didn't have that filled in. So the error happened because I added code after I had already had roaming settings. So my code obviously didn't break, but somebody new installing it for the first time didn't have any cards yet. So when they hit deal, it was trying to do something against the array, and there was no items in the array, so the code broke. So my tip is, before you submit, do a test for a clean install. So you have to get rid of the roaming settings or the local settings, and you can either build that feature into your application, so maybe the user can clear the roaming settings at any time that they want to, or you can just manually invoke it on your own development machine. And the way you would do that is reference roaming settings.value.clear. And that gets rid of everything that's in the roaming settings, so that you can do that test against what a new user would experience when they first install the application.
Great. No, that is a fabulous tip. The importance of testing on a clean installation is huge, especially because that fundamentally is what the testers are using when you submit to the Windows Store. They essentially have a virtual image of Windows 8 and then install your app on that and run it. So you essentially are running on a clean instance of IE. But that's a great point. It's very easy to forget if you have roaming settings in there. So really good stuff. Well, Jason, thank you for your time today. Those were awesome tips, I think, for anyone doing submitting to the Windows Store, especially JavaScript developers. So thank you so much for that. Are there any last things? Do you have a blog or something where people could follow up with you, or are you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, so Jay Follis is my Twitter, F-O-L-A-S, and my blog is jasonfollis.com. But it's been a pleasure, Jennifer. I love talking to you.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming out. One last resource I'd like to direct folks to as well is if you are inspired by Jason and you are interested in doing Windows 8 development, there is a wonderful resource called Generation App, and you can access it by going to http://gen-gen-app. So aka.ms/gen-gen-app. And that is an incredible resource for folks who are getting started with Windows 8 or Windows Phone development. Essentially, there are programs where you can sign up to get a tip a day for 30 days, which will essentially enable you to write an application in 30 days that you could then put in the Windows Store or the Windows Phone Store. So feel free to check that out. There's a lot of other good stuff. They always have giveaways on there. Before it was a Samsung Slate. Right now, currently, I believe they're giving away Nokia phones. So there's a lot of great giveaways through there. You get basically a tip a day to help you write an app. So if you are excited and want to have something in the store, you can get it done in 30 days. Where basically an email every day would say, okay, here's the next step. Now do this, now do this, now do that, and kind of walks you through the process. And then in addition, there's a whole bunch of support stuff that you get through there. So there is design consultations, a certain number of those available per month, as well as one-on-one tech support with a Windows architect. So a lot of great stuff. I wish Microsoft employees could take advantage of it, because there's really, really nice support and options there. I would have killed for a design consultation, I think, on my particular app, because that's not one of my gifts. But a lot of good stuff. So if you are interested, again, that's aka.ms/gen-gen-app. GenGenApp. All right, and with that, thank you for tuning in to Dev Radio.